In this episode of Guidewire, the Fast Tracks team and I discuss some of the most embarrassing experiences that we have had while working with healthcare professionals in our pursuit of identifying unmet medical needs. We also reflect on the ways in which those experiences have informed our own practices.
Welcome to Guidewire, a direct line to medical device innovation. We are the boots on the ground inside of healthcare working to uncover and solve high-impact, unmet medical needs.
I'm Devin Hubbard. I'm the lead design engineer for Fast Tracks.
My name is Nabil Khan, and I'm one of the prototype and design engineers for Fast Tracks.
I'm Nicole Wiley. I'm the prototype and design engineer for Fast Tracks.
For our purposes, we interview clinicians in order to build relationships. At the end of the day, that's the real reason that we do it. But the purpose for us, aside from building those relationships, is so ultimately we can build medical technologies that help people out. And so while we're shadowing, we're not only looking for unmet medical needs, we're also looking to validate the problems that we have come across while we were shadowing and what we've heard from other physicians in other places.
That's right, because the clinician is our end user, and they are going to ultimately be using what we design.
For our purposes, we're specifically talking about hospital innovation. So in this context, I get at least what we're doing, it is mostly healthcare providers that will be the user, but sometimes operator. Either way, they're on the front line in terms of recognizing problems that they face. And that's information that we need. It's valuable to us.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think maybe in another series, we can talk about working with patients, right? I mean, because for what we're talking about in this is sort of, we work directly with the physicians.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Devin, I hear you have a pretty good story about one of your, I guess, top memorable moments that might not have gone according to plan when you were interviewing a pretty high-level clinician.
Absolutely.
I'm interested to hear about this.
Yeah. I mean, so to set the stage a little bit, right, like it makes sense for us to cover some of the strange experiences that I think all of us have had while we're shadowing and looking for unmet needs, because I think that really shaped the way that we do things now. The experience you're referring to is pretty ridiculous. So I was pretty, this is when I first started, I was a little nervous trying to get my feet underneath me, and I went and met with this surgeon, and at the end of the conversation, well, we had this great conversation, first of all.
What was
it
about?
We were talking about spinal fusion, so we were going on and on about this. We had a really cool idea for essentially helping speed the process of spinal fusion up. We had this great hour-long conversation that rolled over to the second hour because we were just hitting it off.
This is in his office, or is this in?
Yeah, so I'd gone over to his office. I was a little scared because I got lost, and then I got locked out of the building. And then when I finally found where his office was, we sat down, and he was super kind. You know, we had a great conversation. So the end of it, I stood up to leave, and my chair bumped into his bookshelf.
Yeah.
And this glass award that he had received came tumbling down and shattered into just a thousand pieces.
Oh, no.
Do you know what the award was?
I'm trying to remember what it was.
Yeah.
I remember looking at it and just totally horrified, but also realizing that it was the kind of award that A, wasn't going to get replaced, and B, was a big deal.
Oh, no.
It was like, this was not a trivial award, and I was so embarrassed. I had no idea what to do. This is like, I was like a month on the job, right?
This is his
first experience with me. And I show up to his office and just smash this award. And he was so kind. He's like, you could tell he was a little rattled. I felt terrible. But he was like, it's fine. It's fine. And I was like, I don't even know if I should offer to repair it.
Yeah. How do you?
I had no idea.
Hot glue it together.
5 years ago, Amazon was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like go shopping.
Replace it. Needless to say, that relationship was a little weird. I didn't really follow. Well, I did follow up, but sort of the interactions sort of petered out. So fast forward a couple years, and it was actually recently, we'll say, I got called into a meeting with that same person and happened to meet him in his office on our way elsewhere. And I looked up on the shelf and the award was like glued back together.
Oh my gosh.
I just thought, ugh.
That means it was very important.
Yeah.
If the time was taken to take shattered pieces and assemble them back together.
There's some validation right there.
It was like extra embarrassing.
Did he say, Devin, you can sit over here and point to the far corner of the room?
Well, actually, he'd moved the bookshelf, so it was no longer in the same spot. Yeah, that was not good. So story and relationship building right there. But yeah, I know you all also have some pretty interesting stories of your own experiences.
Oh,
from
I have one from also when I first started. So in preparation for this, though, I had come up with a list of questions like, what was your background? And again, this is for another top level physician as well. What was your background? What got you into this field? What are some of your day-to-day tasks? What annoys you on a frequent basis? So I had all of this prepared, written down, printed out on a sheet. I go into his office and I'm with another colleague, and he introduces who I am, says that I'm new because I'd been there for about 2 weeks. And this is also here at UNC. So I'd been here for 2 weeks. And he says, okay, Nicole's going to start off with some questions. And I looked at all my questions and I just blanked. I was like, oh gosh, none of these are right. None of these are right. And meanwhile, the seconds are ticking off of silence. So the first thing I said that just came out was, so doctor, you work at UNC, which is ridiculous because we are in his office on UNC campus wearing UNC ID badges.
That's adorable.
But he was fantastic, though. He really took it in stride. He was like, yeah, I've been here for so-and-so years, and I've been with this department. And I was like, oh, gosh, saved by the person I was interviewing. But I just got this enormous amount of stage fright and just said, so you work at UNC. It's like, oh, we're awake today.
Yeah,
Nicole, we are.
Two great stories of like the first interaction with somebody just tanking. Luckily, yours sounds fine. I mean,
I didn't damage anything.
That's good. Yeah,
diplomas were still hanging on the wall when I left.
That's good.
That's critical. My formative experience, I think, was not like when I first came out on the job because things were going pretty slow. But
yeah.
This is back when I was a wee junior, I think. So we had
a wee junior.
I was doing research for a professor that used to work here at UNC, Stephen Knisley.
I know who you're talking about.
And we were involved in a project that related to pectus excavatum, which is where you have kind of your sternum is kind of... there's like a dip. There's like a kind of a dip in your chest. And so one of the procedures for that was inserting effectively a metal bar underneath your sternum.
Wow.
And you kind of wrench, the bar kind of torques the sternum back into place. And they kind of end up stapling it to your ribs to keep it secure. And it kind of corrects that dip in your chest.
It's like a pretty invasive procedure.
This is under general anesthesia,
correct? This is under general anesthesia.
Okay.
And
I
was very mindful of kind of the procedure. I never watched it on YouTube, but I was like, you know, I'm a junior. I have a stomach of steel.
Yeah.
Nothing will perturb me.
Yeah,
I know the world. You know, this is the first time going into an OR, and there's a really nice pediatric surgeon who's like playing, I don't know, like Billy Nelson really loudly.
Yes,
and like,
such an orthopedic surgeon thing.
They're all about their
that's
music.
It's not like a bad thing. It's so
it's
interesting.
It's not a bad thing.
It's like a culture in the OR.
And so I was just like taking in the ambience, and I felt confident and fully prepared. And the patient, who I think was 17 or 18 years old, was brought in already sedated, almost sedated. And I was observing the sedation period, or that process. And then finally, as they're wrapping up kind of the patient prep, they go in to put in a Foley catheter. And this is something that I'd never thought about before.
So for those not familiar with what a Foley catheter is, we're about to find out,
right? So a Foley catheter, patients who are under anesthesia still urinate, and you don't want them to urinate on the OR table. And so...
Or themselves.
Or themselves.
Redirect the flow
so you
to
have
somewhere
to,
where you can
right,
collect it.
Right. And so there's, I guess it's a catheter. It's a tube that's placed inside the penis, and it's kind of anchored into the bladder. There's like a little bulb that they fill out so it doesn't slip out. But... me being a wee junior male, I had never seen anything inserted into the penis before, and it was shocking.
Yeah, I'm sure
there's a lot of visceral pain. And in fact, actually, this is another OR experience that I didn't expect. That was also the first time that I saw any kind of flesh cauterized, and so electrocautery. And the smell of the cautery...
It's totally true.
...was hard for my mind to wrangle, because I think... if I could separate myself from the specific context, I'd be like, oh, what
I know
is
what
that
you're gonna
sweet,
say.
Fleshy, almost barbecue-ish
smell?
Exactly. It smells like barbecue.
It smells like barbecue.
Yeah. The first time I smelled it, I tasted my lunch.
And so I left that first experience with a little bit of knowledge, but a lot of feelings.
Right. Yeah.
But it's important to be in the OR as well for shadowing purposes. So you can do all of your interviewing like we're sitting right now and a table across from each other. But in order to get in their shoes, it is helpful to be in the OR. But a lot of things that we might not know because we don't experience this on a day-to-day level just kind of slap you in the face, like smells or sights of tubes forcefully being inserted.
I teach medical device design to the seniors here in the department, and that's one of the things I talk about, right? Okay, you're going in, and you've probably all been to the doctor's office. Maybe some of you have even been in an OR or been a patient in their OR. But I bet very few of you, if any, have experienced the smells that come along with the operating room and some of the sights. You know, orthopedics is a good example, right? You'll see like motions that you didn't think were physically possible that occur in joints when they're trying to, you know, sort out joint angles and do reconstruction. So there's some pretty intense things, you know. But yeah, I think this brings up some good points about experiences and prepping for going in. I think there's a few other things that we can discuss that also are important before you go in to interact with clinicians. You looked like you had something to add to that.
Oh, I was going to say there are ways to try to prep yourself for shadowing experiences in the OR. Fortunately, and also I'd say unfortunately, there are YouTube videos, but be careful what you watch, you know, because
don't spoil our best practices.
Right. It might not
be best practice,
and there are different policies and procedures and such for different hospitals. I do remember I was shadowing for a minimally invasive hysterectomy. And you are able to watch some of those on YouTube. And it is kind of interesting to see what the physicians see as they're using the laparoscopic equipment. But I just remember being in there and the clinician I was with said, well, this is the uterine manipulator and it fits inside the uterus. And he just picked up the uterus that was just taken out from the patient and kind of holds it up, you know, a couple inches in front of me. There's there was blood and I just, I kind of tuned everything out and was like, I got to step back.
You can't.
This is very close. This is close to me.
So for the physicians listening, right, like the engineers that come to shadow you, we're not always ready to see that. But honestly, I don't know if there's a better way, right?
No,
you know,
there's
not. You can't
not.
Really get ready for that.
You kind of just got to jump in.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
After that, it got better. You're ready for someone to show you something immediately that you might otherwise not have been ready to see, like the insertion of a Foley catheter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that brings us to maybe some practical points about what to think about when you're getting ready to go in and work with physicians. So in addition to the obvious mental prep work that has to go into meeting somebody new and being in an unusual environment, actually, one of the things that I run into all the time is, okay, meet me in the hallway or find us in OR4. And you're like, where's
OR4?
Yeah. And then you get yelled at by somebody because you're not wearing scrubs in the right area or your badge is in the wrong spot. I mean, there's other things too.
Oh. Where do they want your badge?
Yeah, it's supposed to be above your waist.
Okay.
It needs to be up high so people can see it. At least here, that's one of the policies.
Okay.
As far as I
understand. Shirt scrub needs to be tucked into the pants scrub.
Mm. Yeah. For everybody who wants to know the policies at UNC.
I do.
No, I definitely had that too because we also work at a teaching hospital. So a lot of the physicians are used to seeing students wandering around like, where is this? Where is this? So usually when I go and I say, hi, I'm Nicole Wiley. I'm here to shadow Dr. So-and-so. We had this appointment from this time period to this time period. We're going to be observing, we'll say, like a tonsillectomy. And they'll say, okay, yeah, just go around back. I was like, okay.
around back? What is this, like a secret deal?
And she just down the hallway and to the left. I'm like, okay. So I go down the hallway. There's three left hallways. Mm-hmm. And I look down each one. I'm like, okay, that one leads to a restroom. That one is patient beds. That's not right. And then I end up where it's like, don't cross this red line because you're not wearing scrubs. But thankfully, everyone is great because, you know, you can flag down one of the nurses and say, hi, again, repeat your story. I'm Nicole Wiley. I'm here to shadow Dr. So-and-so for the tonsillectomy at this time. You just say, I need help getting scrubs. Where do I go? And they're great. They're like, okay, you know, just follow me and then they can lead you.
Certainly, like shadowing is definitely an exercise in stepping out of your comfort zone in that area, right? It's pretty rare, I'll say, for me to walk in and know exactly where to go all the time. And so I definitely rely on a lot of people in the hospital, which at least here people seem to be relatively friendly, which is good. I actually had a similar experience with vascular surgery. I got invited by a surgeon who's really, really well-known, extremely incredible surgeon. So he says, oh, well, you know, meet me in the hallway outside the OR. Well, unfortunately for me, the case started a little early and I was never told about it. So I'm wandering around lost and I did the same thing as trying to find scrubs, trying to figure out where I needed to go. And I was sort of told, oh, show up in this OR. I got lost. Then I got yelled at for not wearing scrubs in the right area.
No.
And I was just trying to find someone who could help me, which I understand, you know, got to follow the policy. But anyway, long story short, I got into the operating room and I was sort of standing there watching for hours and hours and hours. And I learned a lot about what was going on, but I had no purpose when I walked in there because it was just sort of an impulse, hey, come in and watch. And I left there at the end and I was like, why was I in the OR? Like at the end of the day, I left with basically 6 hours of my time that went to do nothing, essentially. And I think that actually highlights an important factor. When you're going into shadow and observe, it's really important to prep, you know, not only mentally, but also have a purpose for going to the operating room or to the clinic or whatever it is that you're doing.
And beforehand, maybe to get some information from the physician, such as we really have innovation could really be applied to this area of the procedure. Mm-hmm. And then you know what to definitely pay attention to instead of trying to take everything in all at once, which is an immense amount of information, especially if it's the first time you've seen a procedure.
Yeah.
It's like, oh gosh, there's this over here, there's this over here, that's not working. Okay, no, now it's working. Wait, no, it's supposed to work that way, that sort of thing.
You're right, yeah.
But I always do find it that it's helpful after I have a shadowing experience in the OR where a lot's going on, and I definitely don't want to be pestering the clinician with questions while the procedure is being performed, is to schedule a follow-up and say, these are some notes that I've taken. Can we discuss some of these? But keep in mind, I did have one instance where I was shadowing and the tool that they were using to remove part of the body. So it was to remove some adenoids. It couldn't reach far enough back because I guess this patient had maybe irregular shaped adenoids, and they realized.
What are the adenoids?
Yeah, I was going to say.
So these are the glands in the back of the throat. So they're behind your tonsils.
Okay.
So this is through the mouth. So access through the mouth using a special tool to sort of slowly take away the tissue bit by bit. And then they had gone on to another part of the procedure and then realized, oh, there's still a little bit of tissue left, which if it was left, it was okay. It's just the goal was to get all of it out. And back in the clinician's office, I said, yeah, I noticed that the tool couldn't quite get out all the tissue. And it was the person using the tool, I think, was a fellow, I believe.
Okay.
And was like, oh, I could have gotten it out. I could have gotten it out. And I was like, no, I am definitely positive that you could have gotten it out. It's just maybe the tool could have been improved. And I just had to reassure him. It's like, no, I'm not critiquing your work here.
Right.
I just noticed that maybe the tool could be improved. And that's why I asked that question. I'm not insulting you or your staff.
Yeah, I mean, set expectations,
I saw it from
though,
a tool
right?
perspective. Right.
Yeah. Having physicians be aware of what's going on before you get in there is important, I think, because if you don't.
Be aware of what? What do you mean?
I mean, like what your purpose is, right?
I
mean, so at least my experience has been that if I walk in and say, well, even before I walk in, right, and I say, hey, I'm coming in to look for unmet needs. We're going to, you know, tear apart all sorts of ideas on paper after we leave, and we may come back with questions. And a lot of times I have to set the stage, you know, it actually brings up a couple other interesting and important points, right? So often if you say, hey, we're looking for unmet needs, you'll get the, oh, you need to fix this right now, right? And that's good, but it's also, you have to be thoughtful of this because a lot of people in general, right, we want to hold on. Like if we identify a problem, that's our property, right? Like, and it's important to draw the distinction, right? So something that has happened to me in the past is, you'll go in, find a problem, and you might even solve that problem. And it's important to maintain the relationship with the clinicians that you're working with because a problem is not the same thing as intellectual property, right? Intellectual property is a very specific definition, especially, well, at least in the United States.
Yeah.
And it's easy to feel like there's no reciprocation if you're going into an OR or a clinic and a physician's like, here's a problem you can work on. And if you work on that problem and don't give them any credit or involvement in the process, then, you know, file a patent. Okay, fine. Maybe they're not an inventor, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't still be involved. And it's sometimes people have the like my baby attitude, and I get it because I'm the same way, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm the one who found that problem. Why are you
So how do you mitigate that? What do you do?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, we almost could have a whole episode on that. But my general practice is to just keep people in the loop.
Okay.
In my experience, the thing that breaks down there is the communication over time. So what we do is we go in, we look, and then we leave. And it's just like this, you know, it's like a recon. Go in there, gather intel, and leave.
Yeah.
And I think it can be a little dangerous to do that because it kind of leaves the person who's being providing their clinic and time for you feeling a little bit like, well, what do I get out of it?
Yeah.
And I think it's important to involve people in the process. And I think shadowing and getting their opinion is an important part of it. And often it makes sense to keep them involved with clinical trials. And if you start a company or anything like that, I mean, invite them. In my opinion, I'm all about inviting them to participate.
It highlights the very human relationship aspect of this, where you don't want to just take and take and take.
Right.
Or you don't want, no one wants to feel like someone is just taking.
Yeah,
and
it's
not
just
giving.
Like a well.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be drawing from the well until it dries up. You know, you don't. It leads to burnout, right? I mean, it really does. I've had it happen too, where, you know, my students go in shadow, and I'll have physicians who are like, you know what, I got to take a year off. And I understand, right? It's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
To ask their time and coordination. And especially if you're new to this, it takes a while to get acclimated to the environment. And so you may spend a couple sessions shadowing and not really get a lot out of it. And they may, you know, if you're not sort of maintaining that relationship and reciprocating, I think it can, in the long run, it can turn sour.
Also, don't be surprised if you did frequently interview a clinician or shadow them, and then all of a sudden you see them in the cafeteria and wave, and they're like, they look at you like they don't recognize you. They are so busy. They are so busy between OR time and clinic time and
constantly
office time,
meeting new people, right?
Oh,
all the time. Conferences.
Literally.
And that's not even, that's at work too. That's not even considering the personal lives too, which everyone has a personal life. So
I think for me, it's easy to forget. Oftentimes, these patients or these providers are kind of akin to customer service. Like, they're people-facing, right?
Well, and there's a huge, there's like a huge movement towards, you know, patient-centered, you know, quality of care that's beyond just good outcomes. I think there's a customer service component that's really strongly tied to it.
Right.
Especially right now.
Yeah, and I think, at least for me, like, you know, this measly engineer that's like, cornered in a cube and I talked to like seven other people. It's easy, like,
right.
I think it's easy to be initially offended or not offended per se, but
put off maybe.
Yeah. But I think it's important to be cognizant of kind of the roles that they play.
Agreed. Yeah.
I think it's basically, I think it's an excusable behavior.
Nabil,
Nicole,
do you have a
I will never forget you. Don't worry.
Do you have a bookshelf in your cube with awards in it?
I do not.
Well, we should probably populate that scene with some awards. Breakable awards in particular, and put them in spots where chairs will definitely. Full disclosure on that initial story, I was the one who put my chair in a stupid spot. So it was, I'm not at all pointing the finger at anybody else except me. It was totally 100% my fault. But anyway.
Did he ever bring it up?
No, but I mean, how would you, right?
Yeah, like, I'm just
that
curious.
Would be the weird. That would be so awkward.
It's almost closure, though.
I feel like
right?
I want to have a conversation with him about it.
I'm sure Hallmark has I'm sorry cards.
Yeah.
You could just write a note.
So it's
sorry for
it's
breaking
ever
your...
It's going to be the elephant in the room.
An ice cream cake that says sorry for breaking your award.
Sorry or sorry. Just kidding.
The Canadian.
The Canadian really came out there. That was phenomenal.
Learn more about our exciting activities, opportunities, and team by subscribing to the Guidewire podcast on your favorite listening service. If you have identified an unmet medical need or are interested in learning more about our process, visit us at guidewire.unc.edu. You have been listening to Guidewire, a direct line to medical device innovation.
We hope you enjoyed hearing some of our embarrassing learning experiences while looking for unmet medical needs and how it has shaped our need-finding exercises inside of Fast Tracks. Again, I'm your host, Devin Hubbard.
My name is Nabil Khan.
I'm Nicole Wiley.
And you've been listening to Guidewire. We will talk to you in the next episode.